This is Halacha Shia for Parshas Mishpatim. We want to speak about the topic of Chiyuv Hotzaot Mishpat Balacha, and that is who has to pay for the legal proceedings. There are all sorts of expenses that have to be paid. Kimat b'chol mikreshel hitaynut bein atzadim l'din. Whenever there are two litigants that come to court, yeshnan hotzaot shonot. There are various expenditures that have to be paid within the framework of hitayanut. And the question is, who has to pay these expenses? Who has to pay, for example, for travel to the court and back, for lost time at work, zman avud, and all other hotzot mishpatiot? There may be legal fees that have to be paid to the courts, and salaries that have to be paid to representatives and delegates and lawyers and so forth. Now, just to give a little background, b'marechet ha-mishpatim ha-modernit, in other words, within this framework of, shall we call it, Western law, mekubal lifsok la-menatzeach, when the court gives a decision, tips the scale in favor of the victorious litigant, that litigant who has won the case is now worthy. In other words, he has a claim not only to the monies that were involved in the actual lawsuit, but to retrieve hotzaot mishpat, which means that legal expenses have to be paid to the winning party by the losing party. That's usually what goes on in secular courts. Of course, there are different factors that may play in, about the nature of the lawsuit. There may be issues about the behavior of the various parties in the lawsuit. But generally, there is, in a civil lawsuit, a claim against the person who loses the suit, that he has liability to pay the legal expenses of the other party. Ha'im gam halacha makira b'tashlum hotzaot mishpat. In halacha, this is much more complicated. To say that the winning party now has rights to claim legal expenses and to collect those expenses from the other party, that's much more complicated. And what we want to discuss today is ha'im yesh hevdelim bein sugim shalmim shel mikrim habayim lifnei dayanim. Are there differences with regard to different cases that come in front of the dayanim in front of a Jewish court? And ma din b'makom shetoveh magia tviat srak. And this is a more complicated question. Now, this concept of tviat srak, which could come up in halacha in a Beis Din, is a very interesting concept. Sometimes Beis Din has reason to believe that the person who filed the case, who the litigant who was prosecuting or suing the other case, he really just he was doing it as a matter of getting back to someone, or because he wanted to cause someone else damage or loss or so forth. He really never had a case to begin with. It was almost like a fraudulent lawsuit on the part of the Tovea, and as a result, the defendant took a tremendous loss in many different ways, and their Beis Din might treat the situation differently. That's a tviat srak, rak bishvil legrom lanitba hotzaot vagmas nefesh. The only reason why the plaintiff brought this case and leveled a claim against the defendant is in order to cause the defendant to lose a lot of money on legal expenses, and also perhaps to undermine that person's reputation. So these are some of the questions and the issues that we want to discuss today. Let's start with the following question. And this you'll see in the middle of your page, of page one. We're talking about the Hefseid. We're talking about a case of Tashlumei Ha'otza'ot, the loss of money for travel expenses. And here we want to start with the Gemara, Asuya Masechta Sanhedrin. Take note of it, it's on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. And there the Gemara addresses the question in general, which Bezdin should the litigants go to? Omar Rabbi Elazar, Misha Nose Bechaver Mona, Yotzi Mona al Mona? What happens if Reuven lends Shimon $1,000? And now Shimon insists that he paid up or he didn't pay up or whatever it might be, but in any case, the case has to come to court. And Shimon says, come to my city, which is, let's say for argument's sake, to dramatize as far off. Here, Reuven clearly lent him money. On that, there's no machlokas, there's no issue or debate. And yet, now he has to go all the way over to Shimon's place, you know, halfway across the country. And the Lashon Gemara of Rabbi Elazar is very keen. He said somebody who's owed money has to lose money by traveling to another court. And the answer is, kofen also vidan be'iro. But rather, we force the nitba, in this case the lover, the borrower, to show up in the city of the lender. And we save the mouth of the lender all that travel expense and loss of time because he was the one who lent the money. So it means that, basically, according to Rabbi Elazar, the nitba, which in English is called, of course, the defendant, he doesn't have claim to force the toveya, to force the plaintiff, to pay additional expenses for travel in order to be done, in order to have the case come to court. And therefore, lo yuchal lechayves atovel lo leches lagishes tviyosu v'yaracheres. He can't travel out, let's say they live in Yerushalayim, travel out to Tzfat and say, I'm going to sue you in the courts in Tzfat. Because there's no logic, because shatovea michavero mona yotzi mona nosaf, the poor, you know, I should say poor, he may be very rich, but the plaintiff who is tovea now has to incur additional expenses in order to get his money back. That's not logical, that's not fair. Yotza scharo dehefseido, that would be the phrase that would be appropriate in this case. And therefore the Gemara comes to the conclusion that certainly the Toveh has the right to demand that the Nitba and the two of them together should go for education in the city of the Toveh. Again, let's, just to make life easy for us, let's assume that both the Toveya and the Nitba live in the same place. And the Toveya, insofar as he lent money, doesn't have to go out to a different place. The Nitba has no right to schlep him out to a different place. And this is called, the place where they educate, that's called, in the Lashon of Chazal, the Beis Havad. In any event, one thing seems to be quite clear from this sugya, a certain premise that, and if you will, a rule or a principle in din, and that is that the toveya would actually lose money if he was forced to go to a different city, to a beis vad elsewhere. The Gemara seems to recognize that expenses for travel are a valid halachic, there's a shikul, there's a weight to the significance of spending money. In other words, it could very well be that if we would shift the liability, you know, the obligation to pay for travel expenses from the toveya over to the Nitba, then perhaps there could be room in certain cases to justify the Nitba's desire to go to a Beis Vad somewhere far away. So, Gamim Yafsid an Nitba Bidin. Now, it could be that in order to, as we saw in Rabbi Elazar's frame of reference, to defend the Toveya, who has already put out money and lend somebody money, somebody owes him money, in order to defend him, it could be that the Nitba, as a result, the defendant, will take a loss. Because let's assume, for example, that the Nitbal loses the case, and that Beis Din adjudicates in favor of the Toveh, in favor of the plaintiff. Well, what about the travel expenses? If, let's assume, again, I'm arguing against this, but from process of elimination, but let's assume, for argument's sake, that the Nitba, if he loses, he will have to pay the Toveya for travel expenses. If that would be the case, then the Toveya doesn't lose anything. And why would Rabbi Lazar insist that the Nitba has no rights to force the Toveya to go to a far-off Beis Din, to a Beis Avad away? It seems like the underlying premise of Rabbi Lazar here in defending the Toveya and making sure that he doesn't lose anything is the fact that the Nitba would not have to incur liability for paying the expenses, the travel expenses of the Toveya. Because again, as I said before, if we were to argue that there's a chiv, there's an obligation on the Nitba to balance, to offset any losses through travel that the Toveya would incur, then you wonder why Rabbi Lazar insists that the Nitba has no right to sue him in a different court. There may be other reasons why he wants to sue him in that court, and maybe that court is the superior court, whatever it might be. But Rabbi Lazar is protecting the Toveya, because what he's afraid of is that if the Toveya has to schlep all the way to Tzfat, from Yerushalayim to Tzfat, you know, who knows how many times, in order to put forth his claim and get his money back, he's going to incur a loss for travel expenses. But why would he incur the loss? Why not say that the Nitba should pay for travel expenses? And this, I believe, is what the Rishonim mean in Masechta Sanhedrin there on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Take a look at Tosfos, Dibra Maskel V'Yotzi. Take a look at the Rosh, Simon Mem in Perek Gimel. They seem to be making this point, and I believe that this expresses itself, this principle comes to the fruition in the words of the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch. We open up now to Choshim Mishpat Simon Yudalid. We're really early at the beginning of Choshim Mishpat. We're looking at Se'if Hey. Hamischayev Bedin, he who loses the case, Eino Chayev L'Shalim L'Chshek Negdo Yitziosav. He doesn't have to pay for, excuse me, for travel expenses. Afal Pishes Kiko Lodun Bira Cheres, even in a case where he was coerced, he was compelled to leave this city and travel to a different town. So in other words, the Mafsid, the one who loses the case, is not Eino Chayev L'Shalim L'Toveya Et Hotzaot, even though the Toveya had to spend money to travel in order to win the case to a far off Beis Din. Nevertheless, he, the Toveya, has no recourse to sue for the loss of money for travel expenses. And again, the reason might be here that it's a kind of a grumma situation. It wasn't that the Nitba directly caused any loss. He didn't borrow money, he didn't destroy his objects, his possessions, but rather he caused him travel expenses in an indirect sort of way. But again, this is why Rabbi Lazar guarantees the rights of the Toveya to judge, to have the case judged locally, and to spare him all the financial loss of travel expenses, because otherwise the Nitba himself will not have to reimburse the Toveya for travel expenses. So the best way of doing this and guaranteeing that the Malva, the Toveya, will not lose is to force the Nitba to judge, to have the case judged locally, and spare the Malva, the Toveya, all the schlep, etc., etc., the expenses to travel to another city. So that's Roman numeral number one in our discussion. There's no recourse to pay for travel expenses. And this may stand in contrast to secular law. But I want to go on to a different topic. And this is really Maisim B'chol Yom, very relevant and very contemporary. And that is, the Toveya sometimes has to spend money to force the nitba, to force the defendant to show up in court. Now, let's assume, for argument's sake, that the defendant lost the case. And in the process of winning the case, the tovea, the plaintiff, the malva, had to incur expenses because the nitba refused to show up in court. There are all sorts of expenses that are spent in order to get the nitba, the defendant, to show up in court. Let's look at it inside. He says, Masvara she'ein ha-mafsid chayev l'shal l'tovea t'hotza'ot. Harei im ha-tovea zocha b'din, madua yafsid et ha-shlumei ha-hotza'ot sh'ha-hotzi, sh'utzrach l'hotzi kidei l'okhiach et zidka t'anatav. Mitoch divei ha-mfarshim ole, ki ha-tshuva l'sheila zu hi she'medubar b'nezek ha-mugdar kigroma. Omnam ha-tovea, Ach hefseid ze mugdar kenezek akif velo yashir. So as we indicated before, and we came up with this on our own, the halacha does not recognize the rights of the tovea, even though he won the case, to be reimbursed by the nitba for hotzaot nesia, for expenses due to travel, because those were incurred as an indirect damage. The nitba did not directly damage the tovea, but rather indirectly. And that's called groma benezikin, and the overall rule in damages is that groma benezikin is potter. Hamafsid, the defendant who lost the case, garam lezocha bedinet nezek hakasbi, true, he indirectly caused this financial loss to the tovea, to the plaintiff, avakevich u'mugda kegroma, ein ala mafsid chiyuv l'shalim et ha'otzot. Now, do we extend this principle to the case where the nitba refuses to come to Bezdin, and as a result, the tovea, the plaintiff, takes a loss? The Mordechai in Sanhedrin, in Siman Tovshin Zayin, writes in the name of the Ri, yesh, we have to extend this principle. La'archivati kagon afli inyan hotzaot shel kfias ha-nitba lovel abezdin. Im hotzi ruvein yitziosov kidei lochu feshima ledin. Dishima lo yifra hotza afal pisha ruvein zocha betfiosa. So Ruvein had to spend money in order to compel Shimon to show up in Beis Din, because Shimon was refusing to come to Beis Din. And even though the defendant had to be forced to come to Beis Din, that cost Reuven quite a bit of money, nevertheless, Shimon doesn't have to pay for those expenses, despite the fact that he lost the case. And once again, we apply the principle of groma benezikin potur, this like the case of hotzot nesia, of travel expenses, is surely an indirect damage caused by the nitba to the tovea. So therefore, the Mordechai is basically applying the principle of groma to the case of a nitba who refuses to come to din. He doesn't want to show up in din. So gam makom sha nitba mesarev lovo lebezdin kidei lizdayin. Even so, he refused to show up in Beis Din. The Tovea needs to spend money to bring him into Din. Ein ha-nitba chayev lefatzot et ha-tovea al hotzotav. That's the sheet of the Mordechai in the name of the Ri. However, not everyone accepts the principle of the Mordechai. The Rush that we quoted earlier disagrees with the Mordechai. And to quote the Lashon of the Rosh, he says, if the defendant continues to refuse to show up in Beis Din, and the plaintiff had no choice but to incur expenses, to force him to come to the courts, Hoya Maram mi Rutenberg mechayvo lifroa kol yitziosov ha-hotzos. According to Maram mi Rutenberg, the Nitba, the defendant, would have to pay all of that money. That's called, in the Lashon of the Poskim, Sarvanut. You'll see it here, Misarev. Misarev in the Rosh. He is a party who refuses to show up to Beis Din. And in such a case, we treat it as a direct form of damage, causing him a liability. The defendant has to reimburse the tovea, the plaintiff. Now, the Rosh quotes a proof to the sheet of the Marami Rutenberg from a sugya in Bava Kama. This is late in Bava Kama, Kufi Beis Amid Beis. There the case is that the lova refuses to pay his loan, and the Gemara establishes there in Bava Kama that Chayev L'shalim HaTotzot HaMalve Shel K'sivas Shtar Cherem Al Pitzav Bezd. And what this means is there's something called a Ksav Cherem or a Ksiva Shtar Cherem. It's called the Lashon HaShas Psicha. And what this means is that in order to force the plaintiff, in order to force the defendant, in this case the borrower, to pay back the chov, they write a ptichta. Beis Din actually hires a scribe, and the scribe writes a document, and that document is a ban, is a kind of a cherem against the lova who refuses to pay back his debt. And of course, somebody has to pay the sofer, the scribe, who makes a living, you know, he's a hired employee, for all the work he puts in to write up this shtar psicha, or we should call it actually a pticha. And the reason for that is because why was it that this shtar had to be written up? It's because the lova didn't pay back. And just like the lova has to pay back the expenses incurred by the malva to hire us a scribe to write up this shtar cherem, this pticha, so too we have to demand reimbursement from the nitba who refused to come to din and causes all sorts of losses to the tovea in monies that he has to spend to force this sarvan, this guy who's refusing to come, to show up in Beis Din. And the Rosh paskins like this lahalacha in a tshuva, klal kuf zayin, and like the Rosh, we find the Shulchan Aruch codifying the Rosh in Siman Yudalit, and he writes, avalim hoya mesarev lova leBeis Din, the hutrach hatovea lahotzi hotzos lachufo Lered Ledin, Chayev Lefrolo, Kol Haotzos, Shahotzi, Misha Shanasa Sarvan. From the moment that the defendant became a Sarvan, I mean, he insists that he's not showing up and refuses to show, despite the fact that he was subpoenaed to show up in court, all Haotzos from that point and henceforth have to be paid back by the defendant, by the Nitba, to reimburse the Tovea for all those expenses. You'll ask me, it's also a case of Grumma ben Ezekin, and that was the logic of the Mordechai. The answer is that the Sarvan becomes like a Mazik B'Yodayim. Since he has to do something, by deliberately refusing to do it, he is damaging. And again, it might be that we're dealing with a separate Takonis Chachovim, under the authority of Hefker Bezin Hefker. The Sma quotes a Rivash, and he says that Din Zeh Nemar Kishachen Yotza HaNitba Chayav B'din Shebo Nitba. That the precondition for this halach applying is that at the end of the day, the Nitba, the defendant who refused to show up in court, lost the case. And now I want to go on to a slightly different topic. And that is the expenses of going to court. So keep in mind, we're talking about a case of a sarvan, of a nitba, the defendant, who refuses to appear in court. And this happens not once, not twice, but thrice. And according to, as we'll see, a whole school of poskim, Rishus is now given by the Beis Din to the Tovea to be Tovea in a secular court, which is called Archos Shel Akum. Now this is a fascinating halach. Normally, Eila Mishpat V'Shatosim Lifneim V'lo Lifnei Akum V'lo Lifnei Archos Shel Akum. We don't take a case in front of a secular court. Jews don't go in front of a non-Jewish court. However, the exception to the rule is with regard to certain expenses. In the case of a sarvan, in a case where the defendant refuses to appear before Beis Din, in essence, what the nitba, what the defendant is doing, is he's giving the green light for the tovea, for the plaintiff to have recourse to go to a secular court. And going to a secular court will obviously or invariably cause certain expenses. And this is going to be the subject of a lot of literature, especially in the Tshuvas HaRashba. We'll see it also in the Mechaber and the Ramah, and in the Bir Agra. The Rashba writes in a tshuva that even though the plaintiff in this situation is allowed to go to a secular court, nevertheless, his claim that the defendant reimburse him for expenses that he had to, outlays of money that he had to spend in order to go to the secular court, that remains grumma b'nezikin, which means that the tovea has no recourse to sue the nitba for monies that he spent in a secular court. In other words, the tovea has to realize that by taking the case to a secular court, which he has rights to do, he's got to, shall we say, carry the burden of legal expenses. And the language of the Rashba is very sharp. He writes, "The eino ela grum b'nezikin b'al veina doma ledina de garmi she'ose maise beguf hadover shu maziko kishesoref shtarosef shel chaver." The Rashba says that we have a separate halacha called dina de garmi. Garmi is a very strong, almost direct kind of indirect damage for which you can collect compensation in the laws of Nezikin. But, says the Rashba, the classical paradigm of Dina de Garmi is the case of someone who burns a shtar. Let's say, for example, Reuven owns a document. With that document, he could collect a debt that's due to him, and now Shimon comes along and sets the document to the torch. That's called Garmi, Dina de Garmi. In Dina de Garmi, we have a direct hezek on an object that has indirect value. So it's direct but indirect, meaning the shtar itself has a very limited value, but nevertheless, it serves as a guarantee that the malva will be able to collect his money. Now he has no guarantee. And in that case, he could sue the soreif, the mazik, for destroying his shtar. That's called dina de garmi because there's a maisa on a chefza. There's a direct act of damage on an object which now causes someone a loss because that object is gone up in smoke. Here, on the other hand, in our case of a sarvan who refuses to go to Beis Din, and therefore the plaintiff, the malve, is forced to go to a secular court, that's already a different story. The Beis Din mechayven osal shesirev lovel lifneim biyom shekovim. So the Rashba seems to analyze the case of the sarvan who refuses to come to court, and as a result, the tovea has to spend money and he has recourse to get reimbursed for those expenditures. That's because there was a special takana, a kind of a knas, a penalty that was established that Enoch Inami circumvents or undermines the law of Grum Benizik and Potur, that knas which is imposed on the Nidon, on the Nitba, that applies within the Bezdin itself, within the framework of Bezdin. It's not relevant to taking the claim outside of Bezdin and going to the secular courts. And this Tshuva the Rashba is codified here in Yudalid, in Chosh Mishpat Yudal by the Mechaber, when he says, Yesh Mishomer Shim Tavo Biarchos, Vahotzi Otzos, Bidayonim, Vitonim Al. Vitonim afal pisha mitoch siruvo hotzi hutzrach leholicho barchos eno chayev l'shalim ha-hotzos. That if the plaintiff sues the defendant in a secular court, even though it was because of the defendant's refusal to show up in the Beis Din that the plaintiff, the Tovea, was forced to go to Archos, to go to a secular court. Nevertheless, those Hotzaot, all the monies that he has to pay in order to be judged in that secular court, those are not collectible. And the siruvo shal asarvon, the defendant's refusal to show up to court, is not enough to justify a financial liability he has to pay for the legal expenses. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. However, and that's straight from the Rosh. However, if you take a look in the Ramah, he quotes the opinion of the Rosh, and the Rosh apparently disagrees. And it's not just the Rosh, but many other poskim disagree with this Rashba. Yesh cholkim usvir lehu dim hutzrach lahotzi alef hotzos lachufo al yidei archos shalaku. That if the plaintiff had no other recourse, but in order to force the defendant to pay up his chov, he had to take his case to a secular court. And again, all this is because the defendant refuses to come to the Beis Din. Is chayav l'shalim lo. In this case, just like within the framework of Beis Din, so too when the malva has no other recourse to get his money but to go outside of the framework of Beis Din, because he can't get the nidon, the nitba, the defendant into court, into Beis Din, so therefore he goes to secular court. The Ramah says that according to these cholkim, the plaintiff has rights to collect all those expenses that he incurred as a result of going to the secular courts. And the Ramah adds the comment, V'chein nira li'ikar. Apparently, the Ramah rules in favor of the Rosh, against the Rashba, that we don't apply the law of Grum ibn Ezekiel here to alleviate the defendant of expenses of liability expenses because it was Grum, it was indirect Hezek. No. Just like we clearly maintain la halacha that the tovea has rights to get collected when he has to force the nitba to go into Beis Din. So too, in a case where the nitba refused b'chalzo to go into Beis Din and there's no recourse for the tovea, he will take him to a secular court and he will sue him for damages for the hotzaot, the expenses that he incurred as a result of taking his case to a secular court. There is liability on the part of the defendant to pay back for all those expenses. And that's how the Ramah paskins, based on the Rosh. And basically, the issue here between the Rashba and the Rosh revolves around these definitions of Grama and Garmi. And the Bir Agra here in Sifkot and Laman in Yudal says quite clearly that Dina de Garmi is conditional on the fact that osahu biatzmo hezik bamel chavero. You have to take an object and destroy it. That's called dina de garmi. In the case of a shtar, he destroys the shtar. And therefore, the Rashba came to the conclusion that in this case where the nitba, the defendant, refused to come to court, he didn't burn anything, he didn't directly damage any sort of object, and therefore it doesn't come under the category of dina de garmi. So at the end of the day, since Din Garmi requires a direct act of damage to another person's possessions, here in this case, the Sarvan has not done any sort of Maisa Hezek that would come under Din Garmi. And that's the shita of the Rashba. And therefore, the bottom line is, Hanezek HaKaspi Shenigram LeToveh Shehutzach LaHotzi Otzos, by going to a Bezdin Shel Archos, Kedei LaChufo LeDin, he says, Mugdar KeGrama Bilvat. It always remains in the category of Grama, and the Nitba, the defendant, doesn't have to pay for that. And again, as we said earlier, the Toveh has to make that calculation when he decides that he has no choice but to go to the secular courts, that he will spend all that money on legal procedures and legal expenses. However, the Rush, and this is where the Vilna Gaon goes back to a sheet in the Rishonim called the Ritzbah against the Ri. The Rush holds, and let's read the language of the Bir Agro. He says, "Dedina de garmi avi mitam knas." What is the nature of Dina Degarmi? Dina Degarmi, according to the Ritzbah, is not because it's some sort of direct act of Hezek to one of the objects or possessions of the Nizak. No, Dina Degarmi is Chayav because of a Knas. It's a very intense kind of causing damage. Intense meaning it's almost direct. It's not exactly direct, but it's close to direct. And in such a case, the Rabbanan instituted a knas, forcing the mazik to pay the nizak. And there's no reason, says the Gaon, within the framework of the Shitz HaRitzpah, that the Toveah shouldn't be able to have a tvia against the nitba under the law of Dina Degarmi. We saw that within the same Bezdin, if the Toveh loses money to force the Nitba show up in Bezdin, then he has rights to collect that money. That's a Knas. That's the Dina Degarmi of Knas. And there's no reason why we shouldn't logically, by analogy, apply that and extend it to the case where the Malva and the Malva slash plaintiff has to go off to a secular court. And the Grah adds another point over here. He says that the Nidon Didan, our case, is a Shchiach case, which means it's something that's, shall we say, expected or anticipated. It's not something that happens once in who knows how long. I mean, it's very easy for the defendant to refuse to go to a Bezdin. You know, and therefore, since it's Shchiach, the Rush holds that the law of Dina Degarmi applies. Meaning, we don't institute a knas for some far-out case, but since we have to really build up the system in a way that would, you know, make sure, guarantee that the system will work, and that people who lend money or have money debts coming to them will be able to somehow collect that money without losing, then they institute this knas against the sarvan who refused to show up in Bezdin. And that's the sheet of the Rush. And as we said before, the Ramah seems to indicate that La Locha the Iker is like the Rush, and we can force the Nidon, the Nitba, to pay the expenses that the Toveah incurs as a result of his having no choice but to go to Achos Shel Akel. Are there cases where everybody agrees that if a person's a sarvan and refuses to come to Bezdin, that he definitely has to pay expenses that are incurred by the Toveh, by the other party? And that's what we want to go back to the Mordechai. The Mordechai clarifies the following point. Supposing there was a haskama, there was some sort of mutual agreement by the two parties, Bali Adin, Lagiel Adin Bebezdin Mesuim. They agreed, and we'll see the nature of the agreement, but they agreed to show up in a particular Bezdin. And then at the end, one of the two parties to this agreement refuses to show. In such a case as the Mordechai, that party that refuses, the Sarvan party, has to pay Hotzaot Shotzi Kedei She'agiel Adin. And this is brought down by the Ramah. In other words, it would seem that there is a case of a sarvan where even the Mordechai, who is waving the banner of Grum of Inizikin, would agree that the sarvan has to pay. And why is that? because there was some sort of an agreement on the part of both parties that they would go to a certain court. That agreement, according to the Mordechai, creates what's called in monetary terms, in Choshen Mishpat terms, a hischaivus. An hischaivus, which is a financial commitment, engenders all sorts of liabilities. That's the nature of hischaivus. And therefore, the Mordechai would say that there's a liability that is created by this mutual obligation, the hischaivus. They both have to live up to their hischaivus. Now, if we go back to the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, Bira Gra, he says, wait a minute, if the reason for the Shitas HaMordechai, which again the Mordechai quotes in the name of earlier Rishonim, is because Grover ben Ezik and Potur, then it doesn't seem logical that we can upgrade this case of the Sarvan, even though again he agreed to go to a certain court, to that of Adina de Garmi. If the Nezik is called Grama, then it remains Grama, despite the agreement of the two litigants to show up in a Bezdin. And therefore, says the Gaon, if we're going to make any sense out of this Mordechai, that there was an agreement to show up in Bezdin, we're going to have to say that somehow that agreement itself converts, transforms the Nezek into Dina de Garmi. Again, if we're dealing with the old categories of Grama, then nothing changed over here. It still remains Grama. The answer is that in order to justify the Mordechai who forces the Nitba to pay in this case, by virtue of their hischaivus, their askamim, to go to Bezdin, and a specific Bezdin, we're going to have to say that according to the Mordechai, somehow this Chiyuv Nezek, because the defendant caused monetary loss to the plaintiff, is defined as categorized as Garmi. What I don't understand here, and this really requires a great deal of work, I mean, this our Shia today is just an introduction to this sugya, an overview, but what we really have to understand is why the Gaon would think, in the framework of the Mordechai, that when the Balei Din go one step further with his chayvus to be judged, now the liability here is upgraded from the level of Grama to Garmi. How does that hischaivus to oif, how does it engender and activate the law of Garmi? Now, let's take another case of a sugya in Kiddushin about marriage and chasana, expenses for a wedding. And there is an entire discussion based on that sugya about two parties that agree to have a wedding in a certain place and a certain time, and then one of the two tzadim refuses to show up. Now imagine if you pay a wedding hall, you know, or at least you sign a very strong promissory note, very schaivus, and the other party doesn't show up. And the halacha is, in such a case, that, forget about Bezdin, this has nothing to do with Bezdin, we're outside the framework of Bezdin, but the two parties agreed to set up a wedding at a certain time and a certain place. And let's say, for example, the father of the kala decides he's not showing up, the wedding is not going to happen. So now what's going to happen? All the expenses have to be paid by the father of the chasan? Impossible. The father of the Kala agreed to have the wedding take place at a certain time, a certain place. He is the one who's causing the damage. Let him pay the fees. And if you look at the tshuva, the Noda Yehuda, about a case of a husband who doesn't show up in Bezdin to give a get to his wife, I think you'll see that the Noda Yehuda more or less touches on the same svara that we're saying now. He says, "Habal ivtiach liten get liishto." The husband agreed and committed himself to deliver a get to his wife at a certain time. There was a designated time. and he fails to show up. He doesn't want to give a get to his wife. And the Yehuda says that any financial liabilities that are incurred by this woman have to be paid by the husband, who promised to show up to give the get and didn't follow through, he didn't show up. So you see that an agreement on two parties creates a kind of a very heavy mazik situation. And here too, by comparison, in the case of the wedding, they both agreed. And now we go back to the case of the Bezdin, where the Malva and the Lova, the Tovah and the Nitva agreed to show up in a certain Bezdin at a certain time. And lo and behold, the Nitva doesn't show up. In such a case, the Nitva comes under the category of Dina de Garmi by virtue of that agreement and his chayvus that he entered into. Now, at the beginning of the Shia, we mentioned that there is such a concept which is called a din srak. I don't know if you remember the Tvi'a srak case that we discussed. And this is a case which is addressed by the Yeshuas Yisrael, the Shut Yeshuas Yisrael in the Tshuvas, and it's brought down in the Poskim, and it's quite a contemporary Tshuva. The case is where the Malva is Toveya the Lova. So I lend you money now, I sue you to pay me up the debt. And they went to a certain Bezdin, and it turns out that Bezdin comes to the conclusion that the entire halva, that the tvi of the malva, never took place. The whole thing was fabricated. It was a lie. It was a case that was brought against the defendant, but it had no foundation whatsoever. And now, as a result of this whole case, the defendant, the so-called lova, who never actually borrowed any money, suffers all sorts of expenses and all sorts of liabilities. And according to the Shuas Yisrael, in this particular case, the Malva, the Toveya, the plaintiff, oddly enough, would have to pay the expenses that are incurred by the defendant. And why is that? Because after all, it was the Malva, it was the plaintiff who forced the defendant to show up in Bezdin. You know, this is only because of the claim and the lawsuit against the defendant that the defendant showed up in Bezdin and incurred all these losses. And this is considered a nezek, a damage, that is collectible. And the Yeshuas Yisrael adds another point. He says, B'makom shenizbarer, the whole thing is just a frivolous makeup. You know, he makes up the whole story. There was no foundation. This would not even be a question. There would be no controversy or debate about this issue. The halacha would require that the plaintiff pay damages. In other words, because this case was drummed up and the claim was drummed up by the plaintiff in order to cause pain and anguish and loss of money against the defendant, the whole purpose here, the objective was to disturb the defendant's life and to make him pay all sorts of money and to pay lawyers and so forth, so to defend himself, the Toveya has to pay all those damages. And the question is, how do we understand this? Is this some sort of a new din? Does it fit into the categories that we discussed until now? And here there's a tshuva called Tshuvos Hanhagos, that's Rav Moshe Sternbach, who at that time was the head of the Eder Charedis. I think he still is. And he's a neighbor of ours here in Har Nof. Now let's read the language of the Tshuvos Hanhagos. This is Chelek Dalet, Siman Shin Gimel. He writes, D'b'chol makom shenikar, Shatovea yoda bi'atzmo shein mamish b'tfiyoso b'meizid rotzo litzar v'ligrom nezek la'nitba b'hotzaot orech din v'chadome mechayvin onu oso b'hotzaot. If it becomes clear, says Rav Sternbach, to the Beis Din, without a shadow of a doubt, that the plaintiff here, the Tovea, knew that his claim had no basis, and the reason why he put forth this claim is he had no other reason except to cause financial loss and expenses to the defendant. And it was all intentional. It was all provocative. It was all an aggressive act. Then in such a case, we find the plaintiff liable for expenses. Yay! And this is what we're excited about. And here, Rav Sternbach adds a very interesting point. And on a conceptual Lundish level, it has to be understood. It's not simple. He says that this case is not a case of Grumma, but rather a case of Garmi. Why? Ki anezek ktsat yashir. It's almost like a direct hezek. It's not indirect, which is the definition of Grumma. Havi kehezeka shalbari hezek, which means vadai hezek. You know, in every case of an indirect hezek, there's an element of uncertainty. You know, will it cause damage or will it not? Here, everything is clear cut. It was a deliberate act that was well calculated by the Tovea from the get-go. That's called Bari Azeka. Ha-hefseid, she-nigram ki-totsa'ami pula mesuyemet shal ha-sheni, shomer she-yovo, o she-tovo l'chinam. He says in this case, like the case of the Sarvan, there is, you can pinpoint a specific action which was taken, in this case by the Tovea, suing the Nitba, the defendant, for nothing, for naught. That's not like the case of the Sarvan. In the case of the Sarvan, the Nezek was because the Sarvan did not show up in court. That's a passive act. That's a Shevi Altas. And therefore, it comes under the halacha of Grumma. Here, there was an action, Bekum Vaseh, the Tviya of the Tovea, which was deliberate to cause anguish and loss to the Nitba, that already is called a Maisa Hezek. It comes under the law of Garmi. And Rav Sternberg adds that in the Beis Din of the Eda Charedis, they don't have this minhag, and they don't, generally speaking, find a party liable for legal expenses because they consider it as indirect damage. However, Rav Sternberg adds a comment. He says, "Bazavi rak grama to miyemar shitzarch lahavi orech din uvemiyuchad bascholas hadin." He says the reason why the Eda Charedis is a little bit conservative, is a little bit inhibited about forcing a liability for legal expenses onto the defendant, is because there seems to always be an element of question here, of the unknown. You know, will it be necessary for the defendant to hire a lawyer? Will it not be defendant? But he says that one could obligate the plaintiff in a case where it's absolutely clear and objective and well known that the defendant will have no other recourse to defend himself without counsel, legal counsel, without paying an orech din, in such a case where it's clear from the get-go, and that was the intention of the plaintiff in suing the defendant, the defendant would have to take legal counsel and pay him good sums of money. That comes under Dina de Garmi. And in such a case, the plaintiff would certainly have to pay for damages. And Enkan Sorech Vadai Shal Tashim Otsa Mishpatit B'mikrim Sheyesh Tzorech Vadai Lorech Din Yesh Makom Lishkol Chovas Hotzos. So again, in a case where, as we said before, a frivolous and deliberately aggressive claim of the plaintiff and legal counsel is clearly essential, then there's reason to find the plaintiff liable for all legal expenses incurred by the defendant. Let's just add another comment. He says, "Yesh letzayin shegam b'mokum she'ein ha'mafsid b'din chayev l'shalim ha'otzolos l'zolche b'din b'vadei she'ein kolet ligrom l'tzad ha'sheni ha'otzolos miyutoros." And in other words, let's keep in mind that whether or not at the end of the day we can impose liability on one of the parties for causing expenses, whether we can or we cannot, that doesn't mean, there's a whole other issue here, obviously, the moral issue, the ethical issue, the isa v'heter issue, to allow a person to do so would certainly be forbidden, it would be against the Torah law. And Rav Sternbach therefore cautions, he writes, "Af she'onam potur midini yodam av bedini shamayim chayav." All these pturim, these exemptions of payments for legal expenses that were incurred and for legal procedures and everything else, all those pturim, that's only on the level of Groma ben Ezekin Potu, which is a Potu B'dinei Adam, but certainly B'din Shemayim, he's Chayav. And that's the law of Groma ben Ezekin. B'din Shemayim, Groma is Chayav. I just want to mention, as we finish the Shia, just a few issues that really aren't directly relevant to Parshas Mishpatim and the Sugya of Beis Din and Din, but might be relevant to some of you, and are definitely interesting questions. A lot of Avelim feel the pressure that they, during the Shnas Avel, if they lose a parent, Rachmana Litzlan, that they must absolutely become a Shliach Tzibur. And the question is, should they feel that pressure? Let's say, for example, the Avel feels a certain charada, a certain fear, to stand up as a Shliach Tzibur. He starts sweating, his pulse goes up. I would say, in such a case, there's a possibility that we should be lenient. And the reason for that is, if you take a look in the language of the Ramban, Yoredei Siman Shinai and Vav, he says, Nagul Omer Kaddish, Nagul Ageshes Leva Amud. This is all a minuk. It's not an absolute chiyuv. Again, it has a tremendous amount of significance for the niftar, but if the Ovel is not capable of doing this, or not on a regular basis, he's really psychologically getting sick from it, then you know what he could do? He could probably pay someone to stand as a Shliach Tzibur on his behalf. And there are cases in which people die without leaving sons to recite Kaddish, and they hire someone to recite Kaddish on behalf of the Niftar. Or, for example, if, let's say, two brothers are splitting the Amud, it means that not each brother has to go out and find himself a job as a Shliach Tzibur. What we want to do is an Ili Neshama for the parents. There are other ways of doing an Ilu Shama, to be Mezakeh the Rabbim, to give charity and stock and so forth and so on. But it doesn't mean that every single one of the Avelim of the brothers has to drive himself crazy to become a Shliach Tzibur. He has to look for ways of finding an Ili Neshama. Sometimes you have to give an Eitza to an Avel to try to find a smaller minion where he'll be less overwhelmed by the pressure. But again, it's all should be taken in within a certain context. One other issue here that I want to touch upon is opening up a new shul, which is directly across the street from the old shul. And in effect, it's going to have a negative effect on the old shul. Some of the mispalim might want to try the new shul. It becomes competition. And although there doesn't seem to be any halachic basis for blocking such a thing or suing the members of the new shul for establishing the new shul, Rav Moshe Feinstein in Tshuva, in Or Chaim, Chelek Aleph, has a very interesting case about a Hasidic Rebbe who sued a shul that was near it, you know, nearby, that was opened, and many of the mispalim from the Chassidish Beis Medrash all of a sudden started davening in the new Beis Knesses. And Rav Moshe in that tshuva writes that Hanochol ani astaiti shlohei reshus lo lehev lo shemodom liyaseid b'neis haknesses achir mokam asamuch, that surely they shouldn't have done such a thing to establish another Beis Knesses. Shaharbe me elu shayaholchin etzlo kshilo yum yastem Beis Knesses holchul Beis Knesses haacher. He says, as a result, many of the Chassidim of the Chassidish Rebbe no longer daven in his shul, and that, he says, is a violation of the rule of Ani Amahapech Becharora, which is called Yorei Lumnosa Shal Chavero. And Rav Moshe refers to a tshuva of the Chassam Sofer on this point. So what they did was certainly not right. And even though they left a certain number of mispalalim in the first base measure, but it's not in the Chassidish place, it's not the same numbers. Now Rav Moshe's very strong position in that case seems to reflect the fact that this is a private shul, and there's a Chassidish Rebbe, and his source of income is based on the shul. In such a case, that's called Kopaskis L'chiyuso. That's Yorei Lu'um Noso Shal Chavero. You know, you're talking about being Mfakech, someone else's Parnosa. And that you're not allowed to do. That comes under Oni Amahapach B'charova. But let's say, for example, in a regular synagogue, a regular shul, that doesn't belong to any individual, no one's making a livelihood out of that shul, there, it's not Kaposkis L'chiyuso. You know, you're talking about a communal shul. It doesn't belong to any particular individual. And it could be therefore that all Tainus and Tzvius in such a case would have to be re-examined and see whether there's any halachic basis for such a thing. Now, I just want to mention that, you know, taking gray hairs or white hairs out of a head, you know, if a man wants to do such a thing, is a serious issue. There's a real machlokus about doing so, and especially if it's anywhere in the payas area, in the area of the payas. And there are poskim who say that this Easter applies to a minimum of plucking out two hairs. There's no Easter in the case of plucking out one single hair. But generally speaking, pulling out gray hairs is a problem if it's done for beauty. Again, the halacha on this area, you know, we don't know where it's going to go in terms of dyeing hairs and things like that. Right now, the poskim at this point assume kimat pe'echad, but as far as I know, that we're dealing with lo yilbash and those yisurim. You know, we'll have to see down the line if the poskim will be more makil as these kinds of things become more popular amongst men. Okay, Rabbi Bolsai, we'll stop here. Thanks.